By Yelech, towards, I mean the whole parsha is very small, but towards the end, we have the pasuk, Ata kisvu lachem es hashira azayis, to write the Sefer Torah. From here, Chazal learn the mitzvah to actually write a Sefer Torah. Nowadays, many poskim say that you can fulfill this mitzvah by purchasing books of Torah, Sfarim. But there definitely is a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. Someone could do it by hiring a sofer, a scribe, to do it for him. What I'd like to dwell on, at least for a moment, is the fact that the whole Torah in its totality is being referred to as a song. Ve'ata, and now, kisvu lachem, write for you es hashira hazos, this song. Ve'lamda es b'nei Yisrael, and teach it to the children of Israel. Sima b'fiem, put it in their mouths. L'mantia li hashira hazos la'ed b'nei Yisrael, so that this song should be a testimony on the Jewish people. Rashi points out that even though there's a certain dire sense of warning, if you will, you know, as the other psukim make it clear, that if the Jewish people don't follow the Torah, then the negative things, the curses and the punishments that could come, it's almost as if, not almost, the Torah is saying, the Almighty is saying, don't say I didn't warn you. You're going to have this Torah and it's going to be clear in front of you. On a more specific level, it's referring to the next week's parsha of Hazinu. But Chazal, the sages, definitely do say that this pasuk is that which we learn from the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah, to write a Torah scroll. So we definitely see that at least from one angle, the entire Torah is being referred to as a song. Now it's interesting if you think about it, because of course we know there are two major sections to the Torah. There's the written Torah, and then there's the oral law, which of course nowadays is written down because over the sands of time it became more and more difficult to maintain it orally. So the body of the oral law had to be written down. Of course, the methodology is still, to a great extent, passed down from generation to generation orally, and that's what people are doing in yeshivos and schools where they learn Torah. But in any event, we find that this idea of song actually manifests itself on the very practical level in both facets of Torah. Of course, we know that when you go to shul and you hear the laning, the Torah reading, we don't just read it. There's a certain trup, or I think it's usually translated as cantillation. It's got a sing-song. It's sung. It's not said. Likewise, when people learn whether it's Mishnah or Gemara. So when you're discussing things, generally there's no sing-song going on. But if you'll go into your average study hall, a Beis Medrash, and you'll find someone swaying over a volume of Talmud or Mishnah or Halacha, whatever it may be, very often, maybe even more often than not, it's with a sing-song. There's a certain music to it. So we find that this song character of Torah actually finds concrete expression, both in the written and in the oral part of the Torah. Likewise, there's a statement of the sages where there was a thought. In the end, the Gemara rejects this. The Gemara rejects this possibility. But there was a suggestion that people who learn Torah without giving it a sing-song flavor, and they just, you know, say it. So, about them does the verse say, and I gave them statutes that are not good. So the Gemara says, I'm quoting this by memory, so I might not be quoting it perfectly, but I seem to remember that the Gemara says, no, you can't say that. You can't say that just because someone studies without a sing-song, without a tune, you know, that means that, you know, it's as if it's statutes that are no good. But it's nevertheless obvious that it's clear from the Gemara that this is lechatchila. This is the ideal way to learn Torah, to have a sing-song to it. It's fascinating. Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was one of the greatest of the Torah sages in the last 500 years, they quote in his responsa that were published, a letter that he had written, I think it was to one of his children, and he said, if you go to publish my responsa, please make sure that the paper should be of good quality, and that the ink should be of good quality, and that the print should be clear. You have to understand, 200 years ago, these things could not be, 250 years ago, these things could not be taken for granted. Nowadays, paper is usually pretty good, and ink is also usually pretty good, and the clarity of the print is also quite good. But back then, you really couldn't take such things for granted. There are old volumes from hundreds of years ago where, you really have to sit down and decipher what is being said because the print very often is smudged and not clear. In any event, he writes, why is it? Why am I making such a big deal of this? Rhetorically asks Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and he says, because it's like the Gemara over there, the one that we just quoted, about learning without a sing-song tune. What does that do? He says, it makes you lose the flavor for it. When you have a book in front of you, and the quality of the paper is good, and the ink is good quality, and the print is clear, so, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it gives you a sense of enjoyment in what you're studying, so that your mind is able to open up in a way that it otherwise would not have, and that way you're able to really focus on the content of what you're studying, as opposed to feeling that you're kind of groping through the dark and the mud, if you will, because it's just difficult to read it, and it's hurting your eyes, and you have to squint, and etc. So it's clear from his comment that the idea of Torah having this song-like quality is all about pulling us into it. It gives us this sense of enjoyment, this sense of feeling that this is a positive experience that I get pulled into. Now, it's fascinating if you think about it, because probably most of us can remember at least some of the songs that we were taught in nursery school. Even if 30 or maybe 40 or maybe even more years have passed since we last sang them, if we think about it, we might all of a sudden remember them. They might all of a sudden come back to mind. What does that show us? It shows us that song really sticks in the mind. For some reason, the memory, and I've heard explanations before that perhaps it has to do with the fact that when you sing, it's kind of combining the emotional, left brain with the intellectual right brain. I don't remember, I could be getting it mixed up, whether it's, right, left, right. But whatever it is, that there's different parts of the brain where different functioning is controlled or manifest. And when you have the intellectual enterprise of study and trying to understand things together with the emotional enjoyment of song, it really makes your memory and how you process it and the depth that it goes in much stronger. So it's much easier to recall it. And now this pasuk that we're dwelling on is talking about the fact that the Torah will never be forgotten from the Jewish people. So I think it's unavoidable to note that it's the quality of song that the Torah has that is a very big part, if not the main part, of what provides us with that guarantee that the Torah will never be forgotten from the Jewish people. Another interesting thing about song. I took voice lessons for a few months, and during one of the sessions, my teacher, who's an international opera singer, said he was quoting someone even greater than himself in the world of music, and he said that this person said that, what is music? Really, how would you define the difference between song and regular speech? So he said, and I can't vouch for this being agreed upon by all masters of music, but at least this particular master said that really what song is it's speech elongated. It's where you allow the speech to draw itself out in a way where one piece connects to the next, and it's not, broken up the way speech is much more square in the sense of that each word and each syllable is clearly discernible, stands alone, and doesn't necessarily connect with the next the way it does in song. Song has a certain fluidity to it. I guess you could say it's the difference between walking and riding in a boat down a stream. When you're walking, each step is a separate action to a great extent. Of course, they combine to bring about a final effect of movement, of getting moving forward or backward, if you're walking backward. But it's not the same thing as when you're sitting in a canoe and you're just flowing down the stream. It's an uninterrupted, fluid motion. You cannot separate any particular part from within. Another way of saying that is that it's a sense of shleimus. It's a sense of wholeness that you don't get otherwise. Now, picture yourself for a moment. I imagine most of us, if not all of us, have had these moments before when you're either listening to a song that you find particularly beautiful, or you're singing it either yourself or with other people. What's the emotion that you feel at that moment? I think that it's not incorrect to say that the primary emotion one feels at that moment is a sense of completion. You feel complete, you feel whole. When you connect with a song in a deep way, it's a resonance. Everything is connecting. It's not square, it's circle. There's a fluid connection where you can't necessarily say, okay, here's where it starts, here's where it stops. It's a wholeness that does not exist elsewhere. What we can derive from this on a practical level, I mean practical in the sense of the way we view things and the way we frame things, is that we should be looking for that song quality in our Jewish lives, in our connection to Torah. Now, let's speak more practically for a moment. How do you go about hearing the song? Well, let's not talk about Torah. For a moment, we'll talk about actually listening to a song. So imagine there's a beautiful symphony playing on the radio, but you can't hear it. Why not? Well, it's very simple. Because there's a jackhammer banging away right outside the door of your house because they're working on the sidewalk. Or you might not hear it because your ears are full of wax. You haven't been to the ENT for 2 years, and little do you know, but your ears are completely stuffed with wax. Or there might be some other obstruction in there. So the first step is that you have to make sure that there's nothing obstructing you from being able to hear and connect with the song. So if there's ambient noise, or if there are obstructions, you have to find a way to get rid of them. Another important point is to recognize that not everything that just any Tom, Dick, and Harry might call song or music really deserves to be called as such. I'm not going to give practical examples, but I'm sure all of us can think for ourselves of the certain specimens, if you will, that we wouldn't necessarily, you know, maybe when we were younger, we enjoyed it because youth has a certain unbridled, wild character to it. But when you age and you get older, there's a certain sense of, no, that's not really music. That's just kind of noise given a certain musical flavor. But you can't really call that music. Make sure that the music that you are trying to listen to is the real deal. It's the authentic thing. So in terms of bringing that back to the world of Torah, you have to make sure if you want to hear the song and connect to it, make sure that it's the authentic song, that it's the real thing, and that it's not some cheap imitation or fake mutation. Make sure that you're really dealing with the actual song, and that is the song that's been in place from the time of the giving of the Torah until this very day. Beyond that, if there are things that are creating noise, spiritual noise, emotional noise, mental noise, we have to try to find ways to clear away that debris. There's obstructions sometimes in our ears, and in a not a physical sense, but in a metaphysical sense. And sometimes it's on the emotional level, on the mental level, on the spiritual level. We have to try to move away those obstructions, move away the debris, which of course directly then brings us into the time period that we're in, which of course is Aseres Mitzvah, the days of doing tshuva, of engaging in repentance. It's a time of trying to find out where that debris in our lives is, where those obstructions are, and moving them away, and connecting in a much deeper level to this song of Torah, to this enrapturing experience that captures our hearts and firmly imprints itself on our brains, on our hearts, that we never forget, and that gives us a sense of completion in connecting with the source of that which directs us and guides us to writing the symphony, playing the symphony, and singing the symphony of our own lives. Have a wonderful Shabbos.